Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome to another episode of the A-Side Live Show here on MMAfighting.com, your only stop for Wednesday podcasts in the world of mixed martial arts. We're not the only stop, the best stop. But, of course, joining me this week is the man that is usually with me every single week. It's Casey Lydon, but we don't want to hear from him this week. We want to hear from our two special guests. Jordy Torres is back. I'm going to let you talk in a minute. But joining us for his, I guess, technical debut, he made a guest appearance once. But Dean Thomas, something's going on in your life, right? What's happening?
Before I tell you what's happening, can we just acknowledge the fact that Shorty put on lipstick before y'all started recording?
I didn't want to put him on blast. I was going to let his coach do that.
Can we acknowledge that? No, but I'm still in Vegas. I'm still in Vegas. The UFC is taking good care of me. And happy to still be around, still alive.
What was the how long have you been in Las Vegas?
I've been in Vegas since Sunday last week.
Whoa.
So this is, yeah. So I haven't left the hotel room in 10 days.
Whoa.
You literally haven't walked out that door in 10 days?
I haven't walked out this door in 10 days.
Oh, my goodness. That is wild.
So literally no difference than what you do back at the house.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, but this is different though, Shorty. Maybe I should have you do this. So like, if I need something, I call down and they'll bring it up. But you know, everybody was like wants to stay away from me. So like, they run up, they drop it on the floor, knock on the door, and then I watch them scurry away. It's amazing.
How many more days left do you have to stay in Las Vegas?
Well, I'm getting tested again tomorrow, and God willing, it comes back negative, and then I'm out of here.
What was the process of getting the positive results? Because I've had those tests in Las Vegas. Is it the same Holiday Inn that they always stick people in?
I think so.
I was at that Holiday Inn for the Apex cards where they put the media up there for like 12 hours, but none of us tested. I haven't heard from anyone that tested positive. So what was the process of learning that you had tested positive and were now under quarantine for so long?
Well, you know, the whole thing was that, you know, once you tested, you couldn't leave. Mm-hmm. So I was in my room just chilling, hoping that and I was nervous anyway. I was like, man, I'm nervous about this. And then Dana the next day told me that I had tested positive. So it was like, oh, and I thought he was playing. I thought it was a bit for looking for a fight. Sure. I really did. I was like, where the cameras at? Any minute they're going to come busting in this room telling me it was a joke. And that never came. So it was very disheartening for me.
Wait, so Dana's the guy that gave you the call?
Yeah, Dana gave me the call.
Is that Ellinger? Wow. That's normal.
I doubt it. But, like, I mean, I'm actually honored, you know? It's like an honor. Like, Dana called me to tell me that, you know?
My God, I'm sure we'll have questions about that. But, Shorty, how's life with you all the way on the other side of the country from your coach?
I'm alive, man. I'm not sick, which is great. So either I'm asymptomatic or I don't have anything. But either way, man, I decided to come back to Chicago, work with my coach, pretty much who started me off, Master Bob Shermer. Been here for about a week and a half and just doing my thing, you know, training, trying to stay in shape. And actually, my fight, well, because I'm doing this on my phone, I don't have my laptop or Wi-Fi. My fight just got announced. I'm fighting Sean Santello, a.k.a. Shorty Rock. So it's pretty much Battle of the Shorties. The location and the date will both be announced. But, man, I'm excited. I'm just, you know, I've known about this for at least a good month. So I've been training, or at least speculated about this for a good month. Mm-hmm. Training, staying, you know, with Dean. I mean, Dean who? I'm not quarantining. And, you know, just doing my thing. So I'm happy getting punched in the face, all beat up. I literally just finished practice. That's why I look all crazy. But I guess that's my usual. Why not, right?
What happened when you found out Dean had tested positive? Did you start freaking out?
Nah. No, I left.
You left? You see how he is? He left me.
I didn't freak out. I just got the hell.
dude, your house is haunted. There's no way it's not haunted, because I'm in there by myself, and after the first day, I just hear, like, noises of, like, if somebody's home or walking around, and I'll come outside my room, and I'm like, no, I got to get out of here. No, I can't do this for too long. And I left. That's it. I left.
Hey, I ain't gonna lie to you, man. I hear the same stuff.
Like, you just hope someone's there. You can be like, ah, oh, cool, I'm getting robbed. It's not just me, making sure.
But none of you guys are experiencing any symptoms, right?
I'm good now. Yeah. I had some headaches before, but...
Well, that's good.
It's usually because of me, but now it's because of Corona, so that's a whole different thing. He thought it was just normal stuff.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get a million questions about it. For those of you that are just that have never watched this show, you can leave a question on Twitter, the site, wherever. You can send DMs. You can message us on Instagram. Whatever you want to ask Dean, Shorty, and if you, for whatever reason, want to ask me a Casey question, feel free. But, Casey, what is our first question for illustrious guests?
Hold on. Oh, where are my faces go?
Yeah, no one wants to see me.
Joys of live television.
Hold on. Boop. Yeah, look at us.
So Dean, what you been eating while you're there?
You know what I've been eating. I ordered peanut butter and jelly from Amazon and chicken nuggets. Same thing I eat when I'm home.
I was about to say, did you take air fry with you?
I wish.
From Cam Kelly Gang on Twitter, what's the next major change you either think will happen next or like to happen next in the UFC? So this is a very broad question.
That's a broad question.
So, like, what change do you think will happen in the UFC? Shorty, I'll start with you.
Oh, man.
Very broad question. What do you think will happen? What do you want to happen?
The hardest part, I mean, obviously we're going to have closed events going on for a while. I don't believe things aren't going to be back to normal until sometime next year, maybe even mid next year, the way things are going. All these countries are having, you know, pandemics all over again, you know, California, Florida, what are the states? It's Georgia, Texas, all shutting back down because of, you know, all this problem. So I don't know what's going to happen. You know, some states, at least in the United States, are going to close back down. Some states are opening back up. We're not like New Zealand, where we're pretty much COVID-free. So everywhere around the world is going to be extremely hectic. You're going to get people like Dean Thomas not having any symptoms, out of nowhere, gets tested, and he has to stay in Vegas for about 2 weeks, you know? So you never know what's going to happen. These people are going to get tested. A lot of main events, co-main events, fights are going to be canceled. Look at boxing. I think Top Rank had their co-main event or their main event canceled, so the co-main event went to the main. Ended up being a great card, but it's just one of those things that you never know. Gilbert Burns had to stay home, and now that fight's going to be, you know, postponed until another day, which I do believe Burns should be the next guy, but it's a crazy thing. I can't say for sure, but I hope we do get you know, all these fight cards that the UFC has been saying, and same thing with other promotions, but I don't know what's going to happen.
Dean, what do you think is going to – another, again, broad question. What major change do you think will happen next?
Well, I'm going to answer this from a different perspective, not having anything to do with the pandemic. I'm going to answer this from a perspective of I think we need to do something about the judging and the pay structure of the UFC. I think the judges need to be held more accountable. I believe we need to do open scoring. They're already doing that in Invicta. I believe open scoring with the scoreboard at the top. And I also believe that they need to stop the win bonus. I think that the win bonus is ridiculous. I've never seen a person in a fight go, man, I got to get this win bonus in the middle of the fight. It has nothing to do with the fight. They need to pay these guys just a standard flat fee and then raise the flat fee, but pay them a standard flat fee and not do a win bonus, because when guys lose fights, they lose half their money based on three guys that had absolutely nothing to do with the fight. And I think it's just a ridiculous way we score fights, a ridiculous way we judge fights, and a ridiculous way these guys are getting paid.
Have you ever told Dana that?
Are you kidding me? No, I like my job.
That's what I thought I was going to say. I'll play devil's advocate, because we've talked about open scoring. That's probably the topic we discuss and get asked about the most on this show. A lot of people think that if there is open scoring, people will start, quote unquote, coasting if they know they're up. Casey,
and they have a right to coast if you're up. If you're up, you have a right to coast. The burden should not be on you to let the other guy in. The idea, if you know that you're losing, you need to catch up. And if you don't catch up, then you're the punk, not the one that's coasting. If you can coast, you have a right to coast.
What would you say to fans that like the reveal at the end? Like, they like the drama, the suspense of a split decision where they say, and newer, and still.
They're not getting paid.
Yeah, but you'll still get that if the fight is close enough.
Mm-hmm.
If the fight, if in a 3-round fight, if it's 1-1 and both guys know mm-hmm. that they need to win that last round, you'll still get the reveal. But if a guy is dominating the whole fight, he should be able to coast if he feels like it because he done dominated the whole fight. It's the other guy's job to catch up and knock him out.
Yeah, I'm going to be devil's advocate because I love watching basketball games, but I cover up the score. So when the game ends, I try to add it up in my head and I guess who wins. I think it's much more. I think it's a much better way to watch any sports. Just don't know the score of the entire game and just kind of add it up in what you think is going to be the score. It makes it much more dramatic.
That's
so you like I think Invicta they would show the scores to the corners on an iPad, and it was up to the corners whether they told their fighters you're up or you're down. Do you like that method, or do you want the scores up on the Jumbotron for like everyone to see?
I want the scores on the Jumbotron. Everybody should be able to see it. It also makes the judges more accountable because at the end of the fight, when the scores are done, they're just like, I'm going home. I don't care about y'all. But at the end of the day, like, they need to be accountable. Like, what other sport where the refs aren't accountable for their actions? They need to be accountable for making mistakes on scoring.
Dean Thomas speaking the truth on the A side.
I'm getting sweaty listening to it. I like it. I love it. I love
knowledge.
It.
Casey, what do you think is going to happen in the UFC?
Ain't nothing gonna change. It's gonna be the same shit. Guys fall out. They fill in someone on 2 days' notice. Same pay. I mean, I've been like, how long you been in MMA? Like, how long have you been? You been like 15, 20 years working in MMA?
Man, longer than that. I've been doing since 95.
95. Yeah. So I'm year 15 into this, and like, I mean, it's just I don't know. I've been complaining about open scoring. I've been complaining about judging. I've complained for like 15 years, I feel like. I'm sorry?
Well, the thing, man. Not until the UFC starts to feel the effects of it when they'll change it. Because right now, they really have no, like, financially, they don't lose out because of it. It doesn't matter for them. Like, the scores could be wrong. The only people who suffer from it are the fighters. And the fighters are just like, I put on a good fight anyway. I'm hoping to get a bonus. But until you see things happen like Max Holloway and Volkanovski happen more often, where the UFC is like, man, I got to pay this guy. I didn't even think he won. Then we're going to start seeing when they start losing money out on it, then UFC is going to have to do something about it. But until then, they don't really have no interest in doing anything about it.
I'd like to see more of unified rules so John Anik doesn't have to say, well, we're in this state, so it's this set of rules that are happening. And then the next week, I'm watching with the same people in my apartment, and they're like, wait, what is the difference between rules state to state? I'm like, don't even worry about it. It's a whole headache. I would like unified rules. That's what I've been asking for a while.
You know,
but anything else?
Going back to the talking about the drama, you know, people, what about the drama of the hand raise? To me, in a 5-round fight, you get drama every single round. Now, into the second round, now you're like, what's the score? In the third round, what's the score? Rather than just, you know, okay, I'm gonna use this as a go run to the restroom, you know, during the in between rounds. So I think you actually add the drama, you build it up. So yeah, it's stupid. Open scoring.
Show's
over. We got it. That's all I wanted to talk about.
Thank you. Have a good
day. Thank you for the question, Cam Kelly. It was very broad, but we got a lot of good answers. Boring fighters from Jones Eats Cormier on the site. Why does MMA media run to the defense of boring fighters? The Usman fight was boring. Was it high-level MMA? Of course it was, but it was also very boring. Why does MMA media feel the need to, quote, correct fans voicing their displeasure in a particular fight or fight style? I blame Casey. This, of course, everything is Casey's fault. He is the embodiment of MMA media. Shorey, I'll start with you. Why do, I guess, us as media members – I don't think I don't see this much, but why do you think fans think media members have to, quote, I guess, correct fans from voicing their displeasure?
You know, the crazy thing is boring fights doesn't matter. If you get the win, you get the win. And I know media automatically has to talk good or bad about someone just to publicize something to get the story out. You know, for the media, if you're protecting the boring fighter, then you're protecting the boring fighter because he's winning. But if you're obviously bashing the boring fighter, well, I understand that. But if he still gets the win, he gets the win. Actually, it's crazy. Tyron Woodley told me that one time, you know, because me, I'm a person who likes to make a fight exciting. And at the time, Tyron was getting bashed for playing safe in a lot of fights. And he's like, this is when he was champion. He goes, dude, I don't care. I don't care what the fans think. I don't care what anybody thinks. Anyone can say everything about me. But I got the belt around my waist, and I'm getting paid for it. So what's it really matter? for me as a fighter, I'm still going to do what I want to do. The fans are going to think whatever. The media is going to say whatever. But as long as I got the belt around my waist, I'm doing my job, and I'm doing it very well.
Dean, your thoughts. Why does the media have to, quote, unquote, correct fans?
Well, I think the media has more of an obligation to – I think it's a better – it's more interesting in the media to protect the fighters that they're bashing because they want to get interviews eventually. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, you know what? You bashing Usman, I'm not going to side with you because I want to talk to Usman one day. So I think it makes sense that they protect the fighters when they can. But – I think fans need to stop bashing fighters for thinking that they're boring. I mean, it's not – if Usman, what he's doing is winning, it's not his job to stop doing what he does best in order to entertain people because he's winning. If you want to see Usman do something more exciting, it's the job of his opponent to pull it out of him, not Usman to dumb himself down for the fans.
What did you guys think of all the people on Twitter whining about the foot stomps?
Hey man, foot stomps suck. You don't feel it. You don't feel it that day. You're like, my last fight, I was like, cool, you foot stomped me twice. Dude, it doesn't hurt. My adrenaline's up. I don't feel it. And then the next day I woke up and I'm walking. I'm like, what the? Oh, damn, they do work. Huh, look at that. But it doesn't work immediately towards the fight unless you get like that sweet spot. It's so big. But again, it's the old MMA style. If it's still legal, why not do it?
Well, yeah, foot stomps are nothing new. It surprises me how, like, when some of these old techniques are brought back and they're so apparent that people start thinking they're new. Like, foot stomps are nothing new. They've been going on forever since the beginning of time. It's just Usman had the opportunity to use it more now in this fight, and it was, you know, obviously very apparent. But, man, you could break a foot doing that. Like, if you, like Shorty said, if you catch the sweet spot, you'll break a foot. So I like foot stomps. Now, obviously, you know, can you win a fight that way? Well, Usman did, but, I mean, it's whatever. You know, at the end of the day, it's whatever. Like, I think foot stomps are great.
It's like Conor's shoulder strikes as soon as he did it once.
Yeah, everybody's been doing that.
Yeah. It was like I've seen that. I saw John Jones do it to Glover, like, at UFC 172, and all of a sudden people are calling it someone did it in the fights this past weekend, and the commentary was like, oh, shades of Conor McGregor. I was like, I guess, but he's the most recent one.
Yeah, but if the foot stomps would have ended the fight, then people would have praised
That's
it.
Fair.
No. So, but because it didn't, you know, there's that fact.
It's just, to me, it's just like people wanted Masvidal to win, and they didn't want Usman to win. If Masvidal would have foot stomped Usman for 24 minutes and Masvidal's got the belt based on foot stomps, everyone would be like, foot stomps rule. And every question would be like, why isn't John Jones foot stomping more? It's just, to me, it's just the fans want one guy to win, so you're just looking for excuses.
That's a fair point.
But foot stomps.
I hope that answers.
Do you train foot stomps? You don't train them. You just kind of see them and do them, right?
Yeah, you don't really train them. I don't know how you would even train that.
Is there a technique? Yeah. Is there a proper technique?
I guess you would have hit with the hard part of your foot, you know, where it's heaviest. But, yeah, I don't think that's something that, like, you even train. That's hard to train. But, Shorty, Monday.
Yeah, let me put someone in defense and just foot stomp them 10 times, and then other foot turns the other shoulder. All right, cool, it's your turn now. All right, let's keep on doing the shadow box. Yeah, it's really hard to train those. I mean, it's smart, though, because 25% of the bones are in your feet. You know, those are, like, super, super tiny bones. So, I mean, for Dean, for example, because obviously him and I both fight, you ever kick someone and you feel perfectly fine, but then after you're like, oh, man, my foot hurts. It's probably because you ended up, you know, hurting one of the bones, and they're super, super small. So when somebody foot stomps you so many times, like a Charlie horse in the same exact spot, your foot, the top of the foot's pretty much all bone. The bottom of the foot is where really you have the cushion. So if you start healing someone in the foot, man, that can change a thing. So I think it's a great game plan and something that we should practice. And why not? It makes people think too. It's just like, you know, going high low. It's like, oh man, I'm not thinking about the clinch anymore. I'm thinking about moving my foot and cool. Now I get to knee pick someone or throw them by. So it's a different game plan.
Case, you ever been foot stomped?
No.
I'll be right there.
Yeah, I know. Shit.
I watched Chael Sonnen train once, and he had, like, he rolled someone over, so they weren't flat down, they were on their knees, and they had their palms face down, and Chael punched one of the hands from the top position, and that guy lifted his hands up, and he got the rear naked choke. I thought that was super bizarre. I'd never seen that in a fight before.
Remember when Usman fought Maya, I remember Maya being on his back, and Usman grabbed Maya's foot and started punching his foot. Remember that? So... And everyone made fun of him for that. But I was like, well, I mean, it's a strike, and I guess.
Getting punched hurts no matter where it is.
Well, actually, like, you know, you asked me if I'd taken a foot stomp, but when you're sparring, like, you don't, no one's even spars foot stomp because you don't want to injure your opponent over something stupid, right?
Well,
I mean, injure your sparring partner over something kind of dumb like a foot stomp. You won't even, like, use it in sparring, right?
I mean, I've done it, but just like in sparring, like, I'll throw knees, I'll throw elbows, even to the slowest extent. So I'm sometimes tapping people and just letting them know, like, hey, if this was real, just like sparring, like, I'm not going 100%, but if I hit you in the face nice and clean, you know, if that was 100% of a punch, that would have hurt. So maybe you should, you know, put your hands up or move your head. So it's the same thing with the foot stomps. I'll respectfully put it down, and people are like, damn, maybe I should move my foot. Ah, trap. You know, so it's just little techniques. Change the game.
More foot stuff. Hope we can answer your question, Jones. Eats Cormier.
Oh, and Dan, but the MMA media running to the defense of boring fighters. It's like, it was a boring fight, but a boring fighter is the champion. So boring and winning are two separate things. So
I don't even think that fight was overly boring to begin with.
No, and it wasn't. And it wasn't.
It definitely wasn't.
It was just, yeah.
You know what? If they don't want fighters, if they want fighters to just be exciting, then let's stop having winners and losers. And let's just say everybody wins and let's just be exciting.
Yeah.
But when the reward and the goal is to win, you got to do whatever you can at all costs to win. Use your skill set to win. What Usman's doing is great. I don't care if it's exciting or not. He's winning.
There you go.
From Grin N on the site, what's the bigger issue with the controversial MMA decision win-loss, the 10-point must system or the quality of judges? Dean, I'll start with you since this was you brought this up. What's the bigger issue?
I think they kind of go hand in hand because of the 10-point must system, which is, I think, ridiculous for MMA. It's just not enough. You're going to need a high quality of judges that know everything about the game. And that's the problem, because, like, in order to effectively judge MMA, you have to know a lot about jiu-jitsu. You have to know a lot about boxing, a lot about kickboxing, a lot about wrestling. You have to know a lot about these things because you need to know what is harder to deal with. You need to know what submissions are, like, close. There's a lot to know. And then you add into the fact that, like, the 10-point must system is so vague. I mean, it only works for boxing because there's only 6 punches being thrown. But when you're talking about a sport that has so many different things involved, we need a little bit more. We need something more to really give it a little bit more
nuance
difference in what we're doing here. Because 10-point must system won't work for that. And then if we have to use the 10-point must system, we need a high quality of judges, somebody who knows what they're doing. Not some dudes who, like, just watched it and were fans of it or came from boxing, because now you're biased towards the boxing. So I don't know. I think it's probably – I think at the end of the day, it's probably a 10-point must system that just should be fixed first as opposed to the quality of judges, because that's – because you it's hard – it's going to be hard to get good judges across the board as opposed to at least fixing the system in itself.
We asked Israel Adesanya this question. He says if we're going to use the 10-point must system, he wants to use all 10 points. I can't remember the exact round. He's like, one of those rounds against my Kelvin Gastelum fight, that's a 10-4. That's not a 10-9. I beat his ass. So he wants to use the entire 10. He's like, if we have to use it, use all of them. But Shorty, yeah, exactly. What do you think?
I think so. I think that's the only way it works.
Shorty, what do you think?
Yeah, we do have to fix and adapt the 10-point must system, because boxing, cool, that works for boxing. That was made for boxing, but we need something made specifically for MMA. It is a completely different sport where we're on our feet, we're on the ground, and we're using many more tools. And again, I see people winning fights off of submissions attempts, but how tight were these submissions? Were they just kind of thrown up? Is that considered a submission attempt? Does it have to be locked in? It's the same thing with punches. If you got a fighter who's always throwing pop shots, but then on the board it says he's landed this many significant punches, who's counting that? You know, so we need people behind the scenes, the judges, or even the, you know, the guys who just in general take the points of you know, to have them be better educated. You know, obviously look at Frank Trigg as a referee. I think he's a phenomenal referee because he's been through those experiences. He knows maybe this choke is tight. He knows that this guy spit out his mouth guard because he's actually tired instead of, oh, it just fell out. You know, it's just these little things of people need to be naturally put in there to better understand them while watching it during a fight. compared to like when somebody gets dropped, the Jose Aldo fight. Obviously, there was a controversy where it should have been stopped much earlier. Do I agree with that? Yes. But then you also have to look at from the fighter side point of view of he's a champion. You're trying to let him go out in the Shield. But then, okay, maybe you give him a little extra time because it is a championship fight. But now you're giving him too much time. And now he's taking too much damage. So, again, it's those things you have to take a look at. And I believe the judging is the biggest part. And then eventually adapting the 10-point must-haves in the MMA.
Casey, what do you think?
I think the 10-point must system sucks. Sucks. How many? I can't think of one on top of my head. But like, how many fights have we seen a three round fight where one person maybe wins rounds one and two by like they got an extra jab in there. They push a guy against the cage for an extra 15 seconds at the end. So like, I guess I gotta give him that round. But then that third round, that guy just takes an ass whooping, but not quite a 10-8. Not like quite like he's almost dead. Because we have to like guys basically have to almost lose half their life to give him a 10-8. So like the most significant damage in the whole fight, in the whole 15-minute fight, was done by the losing fighter. And we see it so many times where like, you know, one there's 10-9s and there's big 10-9s, but we count them the same. So 10-point must system sucks. Way over the quality of judges.
That's part of the suckage. Thank you for the question, Grin N. A lot of judging in.
Yeah, I know.
What we're going to change in UFC this time.
Is this another one? Another judging one?
From Robin G87. Well, when will the referees learn? When referees go through the rules with fighters in the back, why don't they warn them not to poke opponents in the eye, don't kick your opponents in the balls, and don't grab the fence? It's ridiculous that the referees during a fight got a go to a non-English speaker's corner to have a translator warn a fighter about the rules. Follow-up question, how many months will Stipe be injured after his next fight with Cormier due to blame an eye poke? So, Shorty, I'll start with you. Why, I guess, you've been in the back, you've had referees tell you the rules, so on and so forth. They tell you the rules in the back, right? So I'm not just making that up. So, still happens. I think a lot of the eye pokes and low kicks and everything, I'm going to say almost the vast majority of them are accidental. No one's just going to go out there and just kick someone in the junk or poke someone in the eye for no reason. So, but to answer this question, talk about the referees.
Unless you're in, like, UFC 1 through 10, you know, sure. Just start groin-shotting Joe-san and just keep on going until he lets go. You know, it's one of those things. Oh, dude, just so thank you, Dean. I've been watching the old UFCs. They're freaking hilarious.
I told you.
Headbutts, groin shots. But the thing is, back in the day, those rules weren't explained. They were just like, well, I can do anything. They just start clawing people, you know? So it didn't matter. But nowadays, they literally tell you, you can't do these certain things, even in practice. Don't obviously eye gouge. These are things when the first time you spar naturally, you can't do these certain things. So implement what you can do. And that automatically, as your amateur days go on and your pro career goes on, that becomes common sense. No groin shots, no eye gouging, no holding on to the opponent's gear or shorts and stuff like that. You know, so the rules are one, common sense. The rules are also explained to you back in the locker room. And then they're explained again to overemphasize them. They're like, hey, man, you had your one mistake. Now the next one, you might be deducted a point, two, or even disqualified. So don't do it again. And it's just – it's one of those things that happen. I mean, the groin shots most of the time, majority, I never see someone just full straight out front kick someone in the groin. But there's some times where just some guy moves, he's throwing an inside leg kick, and it just slides up. Those things actually do happen, sometimes more than once. And after that, you're like, okay, cool. I'm not throwing any inside leg kicks anymore. I'm not throwing any low body shots anymore. That's where the fighter has to change up the game. But – It's naturally explained. And for the Stipe question, hey, man, he's older. This might be his last fight, too. So he can be injured as long as he wants to be. And plus, he's fighting, you know, for his service, being a firefighter. Let him do him, man. I can't complain, but I'm excited for this third fight. And I think it's a good last fight for both if they both decide to retire, for sure, for Cormier.
Dean, to answer the question, when will referees learn?
That's an unfair question because you're assuming that they don't go over the rules in the back, mm-hmm. in which they do go over the rules in the back. But at the same time, it's not really the referee. Just because like you see fighters go out there poking, it's like telling a 5-year-old don't go in the cookie jar, and then they go in the cookie jar. You can't say
I still go in the cookie jar every day.
Yeah, like it's like telling Shorty not to go in the cookie jar. He's still gonna go in the cookie jar. It's not my fault. He still went in the cookie jar. So, yeah. So the reality is, it's not the ref's fault most of the time. It's the fighters that, you know, sometimes they get caught up in the moment, or sometimes they just don't care. They're just like, you know what? I'm gonna take my warning. So I'm going to get one.
Everybody gets one.
Yeah, everybody gets one. I'm going to get mine. But in terms of Stipe, how many months will he be injured after his next fight? I don't know. I don't think Cormier is going to blatantly poke him in the eyes. I think that's, again, an unfair assessment of Cormier's skill set.
Yeah, our own Damon Martin spoke with Cormier, and he thought it was an absolutely ridiculous question. He was like, what do you think? I'm just going to go out there and stab someone in the face on purpose? Like, it's not going to happen. So I hope that answered your question, Robin G, though.
Dean, Shorty, what do you think about this? I've always been a big proponent of half-point deductions. Like, because basically, like, you always say you get one, you know, eye poke, get one fence grab, you get one ball shot. So to me, what I hear means those are illegal. If I get one, it means it's legal. I mean, if I can kick you in the dick one time, that's a legal shot. So why instead give him a half-point deduction? It's a serious infraction, but it won't, that half-point won't adjust, won't mess up the final score. So it's a really hard warning, and I don't know. I just think I was on half-point deductions might be an answer to that.
Well, no, I think they can give a point if but I guess Israel Adesanya said it best the way you said it, like, used all the 10 points. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think in MMA, if they used all the 10 points, then point deductions would matter in those situations. And I think that if you're going to use a 10-point must system, you got to use all the 10 points.
Yeah, I think everything goes back to the scoring system. Yeah.
The scoring system. Bring back pride rules. That's what I'm going to say.
Well, man, hell nah. Nobody want to get kicked in the head.
Besides soccer kicks.
I just want to say, I remember training with, like, Adrian Morris and Kyoji Horiguchi, and I would stay in headlock position. I'm like, ah, cool, I'm sucking a headlock. He's not going to get me with the choke. Then I don't know where he starts leaning the head. I'm like, dude, you can't. Oh, they're from Asia. I can't do this. Damn, I got to move. You know, so it's just those little things. And I just want to tell you, like, being able to kick or knee a grounded opponent in the head is the scariest fucking thing you've ever been through. So for the guys who fight for ONE, Ryzen, and all those promotions in Asia that allow that, good for you, man. Good luck.
When I fought Amal Suliyev over there in Anoki Bombay, man, he kneed me in the head when I was on the ground. I said, hell no, get me the hell out of here.
Ask Chuck Liddell that question once. He goes, if he could change anything about MMA. It was a similar thing, like, if you could change anything, rules or whatever. And the one thing he picked, he goes, knees to grounded opponents, because I would have destroyed everyone. And I was like, oh, God, a terrifying human being.
It's a game changer. It 100% is a game changer.
When I think about knees to a grounded opponent, I just, like, oh, God, I get so happy thinking about it, and I just miss it. So, like, how many fights do you watch? Like, oh, my God, this fight would be over right now if they could just knee him. It would just be over. But, no, instead we get, you know.
Or look at the fight that just happened. It was all over social media where they both kind of rocked each other. One guy fell, and the guy just ran up and kneed him right in the face to a grounded opponent. And it was just like, oh, that would have been awesome. But sadly, you're disqualified, you know? So, and honestly, that actually happened to me one of my fights. The guy dropped me, and I went to shoot him for a double, and he just ran in and went to knee me. And I was like, wah, and I ducked. But if I didn't duck, dude, I would have been out. But he also would have been disqualified. So it just changes the whole game of, is it there? 100%. But is it legal in the States? No, and I prefer it to be, you know, illegal, just because, man, that can not just change the game, but change lives. And I'm not about that.
Yeah.
I get hurt enough. I'm good, man. I'm good.
What about the oblique kick that Wonderboy wanted to get rid of for a while?
Get rid of that for a while?
No, Wonderboy wanted. He thought it should have been an illegal kick. The kick to the top of the knee that, like, buckles your knee back.
I'm wondering why he would want that to be an illegal kick, because that's a major weapon of his.
I think it was after his Darren Till fight when his knee got all shredded because of those kicks.
Is he the one throwing it?
I think he was eating him.
I think he was the one eating him.
Yeah, Darren Till kind of beat his legs up with that kick. I like that kick, as a matter of fact. I think you know, it's a gray area, because if you go to the knee, it's, you know, that's very dangerous. But if you go to the thigh, it's not as dangerous, but it still serves the same purpose. But it's hard to kind of judge that in the middle of a fight, like, you know, you're trying not to hit the knee. So I don't know. I like the kick, and I think that it should be legal. I do like it.
I don't like it. It hurts a lot, and I'm very heavy on the front leg. So don't if you're any one of my future opponents, don't. ever do that, I will not like you. That's it. That's really all go. I can do. Because I probably won't get around it, but I just want to say I don't like you. Don't do it.
Is that all it takes?
Yeah.
All right.
That's all it takes.
Just kick my knee, and I can't win. I can't get past it.
I also know Joe Schilling hated it. Joe Schilling called it a chicken shit kick. I think that's what he called it.
Yeah, heavy. Yeah, guys who are heavy on their leg, you know, heavy on their front leg, mm-hmm. Yeah, of course they don't like it, yeah.
From Jay's store on the site, what's next for Jiri Prochazka? Is he ready to fight the men in the title conversation at 205, Jan Reyes Santos? If he is or isn't, who should he fight next? So, Casey, I'm going to start with you because you've seen Jiri Prochazka fight live in person at his last Ryzen fight. He, of course, kicks the door in and knocked Volkan Ozdemir out dead at the beginning of the second round. Super weird fight to watch. But what did you make of his performance, and who do you want to see him fight next?
Oh, I thought his performance was freaking awesome. That was the most outside of Andrade Nomanunis. That's like of all the weekends of fights, that's probably the second most exciting the fight I was looking forward to the most, because I've just been such a big fan of him. And I'm bummed he's in the UFC only because I just love seeing him in Ryzen and seeing him in the big Saitama. And I wanted more bigger fighters over there, like literally bigger fighters over there. But I'm happy of his success. And man, of course he's ready for those guys, Reyes. So if John Jones is going to be out, I don't know if they're going to do an interim belt or whatever. I don't know how the UFC wants to promote him. But, like, yeah, he's already in the mix. So, yeah.
Didn't he call out Johnny Walker? What do you guys all think about that fight?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, make it happen. You know,
there you go.
Like, this is the thing. You know, we talk about the light heavyweight division, and like nobody ever really calls the light heavyweight division what it really is, weak. I mean, how a dude come in his first fight automatically? They talking about title. Like, what the other like? You can't do that at bantamweight. You can't do that at featherweight, lightweight, welterweight. You can't do that in them divisions, but the light heavyweight division and the heavyweight division, you can. A guy come in, knock somebody out, and then all of a sudden, boom, shoot right up to the top. Now you say, yeah, well, he knocked out Volkan, but the fact that he got a chance, an opportunity to fight Volkan shows how deep the division is. Not very deep at all.
Spin facts.
Spin facts.
It's one of those things. Damn, I can't even follow up that. You know, it's one of those things that, like, did he perform well? Did he beat a good veteran in the UFC? Yeah. But that's one test. Give him one more. Give him two more. Let him face some really high-level guys, some guys that are ranked top 10, top 5. And then let's talk about if that guy is ready for a title shot. I mean, look at the guys that have fought John Jones. They've been pretty much 1, 2, and 3 all in line. But we need someone. We can't just go, oh, this guy's popular. He's done all these things. Let's automatically give him a title shot. Like Dean is saying, that just shows that the light heavyweight division isn't stacked at all. So they're like, oh, one fight, he's popular. Let's get him up there. So it's become a popularity contest, and people know him instead of, here, let's have him prove the point against these top 5 guys. And then once he beats one or two of them, not John Jones fight. I do believe he should take some time and see where it goes from there and actually prove the point compared to just one fight. But hey, if the fans want it so far, the UFC is going, if this guy's popular, let's get him up there.
I don't see it as just one fight. I think he's proven, like, in his resume that he's ready for those guys. I mean, I don't think, you know, he's not a contender series guy. I think he's already a legit full prospect out there. And I love the matchup. And I think he's earned his way to get to the top of the line, front of the line. So.
His record is 27-3. So he has 30 professional fights. He has not lost. Before he knocked out Volkan Ozdemir, he knocked out CB Dolloway in his last fight at Ryzen. And his last loss, God, I have to go to his second page, was in 2015. Knockout punch in at 5:09 of the first round. So long in like a 10-minute first round. The winner of Anthony Smith versus Ratchik. There you go. I like that fight. They're all, like, right there, 9, 10, 11.
Yeah.
Or 8, whatever it was. Anyway, hope that answered your question.
But John Jones is going to be out for a while, so what are we going to do about that title?
Jan versus Reyes.
Yeah, sure. I like that.
Yeah, see? It's like Dean said. Like, sure, that makes – why not?
Why not?
Why not?
Keep his hands up next time, though. From Trumbo on the site, what's next for Aldo? He gave Jan a really tough fight, just faded in the later rounds. He's also brought back that murderous leg kicks to everyone's delight. He can obviously still compete at the highest level, but where does he go? Does he stay at bantamweight for a few more fights and try to get back to the belt? Does he go back to featherweight and try to get a rematch with Volkanovski, or does he finally go to lightweight? What does he do? So Jose Aldo, of course, came up short in his bid to capture the vacant bantamweight title. I think this fight was super fun to watch. High-level striking for the whole time until, like Trumbo said, Jose Aldo kind of faded by the fourth round, which has been following him. That narrative has followed him pretty much his whole career. I think he broke his rib sometime in the first round. That's what they were saying. I don't know if that's the actual thing. He got punched, like, clean down, and he kind of turtled up. But to me, watching it, it looked like when he was finally throwing his leg kicks in the second round, that gave Jan problems. And then he just abandoned it in the third round. So if he had kept up what he was doing in the second round, we might have had a different story. But he didn't, and he lost. Jan is now the champion. But, Dean, if you're Jose Aldo's coach, what do you want him to do next?
You know, I guess you'd have to see where his heart is right now. Like, I'm assuming he probably still wants to fight. But, I mean, at the highest level, when you're dealing with, like, the top five guys, I don't think weight matters as much because – He's probably not going to beat the top three anyway. So if he's not going to beat the top three, why kill himself to cut a bunch of weight? You know, so I think he could fight. If he wants a lot of fights to happen, I would go back up to 145 and just fight, you know, some dudes there so you don't have to cut so much weight, or even go to 55 and fight guys, because getting the title, if he's not willing to put in the work, or if he doesn't think he can get the title, man, just have fun fights and don't cut a lot of weight. Do it like Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I say right now should be fantasy fights. You know, the WEC, you know, fight that we all wanted, Dominic Cruz versus Jose Aldo, would be amazing. Whether that's at bantamweight or at featherweight, I think right now he's lost, what, three straight title fights? And then obviously the Marlon Moraes fight, which, you know, I personally thought he lost. It was a very close fight, could have gone either way. But it's the fact of he lost the fight, got the title shot, which... I think the title shot was more out of respect than anything, and he lost that one as well. You know, I'm not saying he's completely out of his prime, but he's definitely sinking down, and he's facing these young, high-level guys, the top five, that might not be able to go 100% the first two rounds, but they start to pick it up like Peter Yan did, and he's pushing the pace, and now, you know, the championship rounds, he just can't hang anymore. So for me, I think right now, just enjoy the money fights, enjoy the fantasy fights, and I think the Dominic Cruz fight would be really, really fun to see.
I also would not hate seeing him fight Anthony Pettis at lightweight. I know they teased that. They even had a stare down on the beach in Rio one time before that fight fell out. But Casey, what do you want?
Make a catch fight at 150.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? In this world, Jose Aldo can do whatever he wants at this point, future Hall of Famer. Casey, what do you want to see from Aldo?
I mean, I get why Aldo wants, you know, another shot at Jan or the belt, because, I mean, just the money is so much better, because I don't think he's a big enough guy where he's getting that. He's still on a show and win type perks. He's not like a guarantee, like, oh, here's a $750,000 no matter what happens. You know, he still has to win the fight. He's on that still type of contract. But I get why he wants the belt. I mean, it's just a lot more money involved. But but I agree with both Dean and Shorty. Just give him super fights right now, and hopefully he's happy with that. But to me, like Aldo, I mean, like as offensively, he seems to be still in his prime. But it really comes down to durability. He just seems just doesn't have that. He doesn't have. Unfortunately, I just don't think he has that championship level of durability you need. The punishment you have to be able to take to fight these guys at the highest level. I don't know. Do you agree, Dean?
Yeah, I think so. And it's not necessarily his durability. I think he's taken way too much damage throughout his career. I mean, here's a guy who's been like in these wars since Mark Hominick. You know what I mean? He's taken way too many punches. And the way those guys train down in Brazil is pretty tough too. So like they take a lot of punishment in training, take a lot of punishment in fights that he just can't sustain it no more. Like, he's tough enough and mentally tough enough to take it, but physically his body's just giving out on him. And that was one thing that I think Connor said when he fought him. He said he's over the years, he's not gotten better, but he's taking the punishment of it. And that was why he was able to, you know, kind of bait him into that fight that he did and you know, catch him with that shot. But, you know, a lot of these guys just take a lot of punishment, unnecessary punishment in practice. And then he's been in wars and fights and just he can't take it no more.
And Nova Uniao training is no joke.
Yeah, everybody says that. Everybody knows that. Like, that's like, you know, they put him through the gauntlet in every session, I hear.
Yeah.
I watched like I think it was when Junior Dos Santos went to train there for one fight camp. They did like an embedded there type thing. And after the fights, they would all climb a ladder to the roof of the building and sit in like buckets of ice. Like, that's how they would train. That's how they would recover. They would sit on the roof of their building in buckets of ice and then go back down and train. No. So even their recovery methods were just Spartan-like.
God.
From Trumbo on the site, points taken for groin shots. Every time someone gets hit with a bad groin, opponent gets 5 minutes to recover, and necessarily the fighter who threw the groin strike gets the same amount of time to rest and recover. Result is the faulted fighter comes back recovered but diminished, and the fighter who fouled him comes back refreshed and better for having done it. What can be done to make this more fair? Take a point away for every groin shot. Give the fouled fighter the choice of where the fight restarts in the center of the octagon. Give the victim top position on the ground. What do you think? Obviously, in most cases, the foul is accidental, but it also has the significant impacts on the fight. So another question about refereeing. What can be done about groin shots? Because I can't remember the exact fight. I think it was the Leo Santos fight. There were several. And at the end of it, the referee was literally yelled at his opponent, be like, "What are you
Leon,
thinking?"
I think it's Leon Edwards, yeah.
Not Leon.
No, Goddard. Was Goddard? Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Was Leon Scott was the referee not Leon Scott. I can't remember.
Yeah, okay, no matter. Yeah.
The referee got like visibly angry at like, I think it was the third foul.
No,
of the
card. It was the illegal knee.
Well, yeah, and it took 2 points away from what if I remember correctly. So, but Shorty, what can be done about groin shots in MMA?
I think that was Mark Goddard, but I know what they told us in the IMOF. Immediately, you get one. That's it. No matter what the foul is, you get one. The next one, you don't get a point deduction. You get disqualified. You know, so for me, I remember I was so nervous in my first championship fight that I threw an inside leg kick and it slid up. And my first strike at Worlds was a groin shot. I'm like, oh, great. Fuck me. So it's one of those things that after they're like, dude, one more time. That's it. So no more inside leg strikes. So you have to change your game. So if you know a guy's moving in or certain things, just change your game. Instead of throwing the inside leg kick, all right, now start throwing the left hook or whatever the case may be. So I think once you get warned once, that's it. There's no more, obviously, in MMA as a professional. It's a little more, you know, crazy when it comes to me. So you want to get point deductions instead of completely disqualified, then the fight's over. So I think after one warning, that's it. A point deduction, 2 points, and then you get disqualified. But we saw, I believe it was Mark Goddard who refereed that fight. Mark was, even though the guy wanted to take the full 5 minutes, after every 30 seconds, Mark Goddard was like, how you feeling? Cool, trying to kind of bring the guy back in instead of getting that full recovery. So I thought he did a really good job. And I think he warned the guy twice. And then the third time, he immediately took 2 points. You know, so he skipped the whole 1 point thing and went straight to 2 points. So it's the fact of you got to have the referees try to force these fighters instead of just waiting on the side and go, cool, hey, man, you got 5 minutes. Let me know when you want to come back in. Because some guys, I think one of those groin strikes seemed right at the belt line where it seemed like maybe it hit you, maybe it didn't. And the guy took about 2.5 minutes until Mark Goddard was like, all right, no, you seem fine. Let's go back in. You know, so
I think that was the Masvidal fight. I think it might have been the Masvidal fight in the main event. As Mark Goddard yelled at both fighters that their corners were still trying to coach them after the groin strike. That, like you said, was kind of on the belt line. But I'm not going to try and argue what hurt and what didn't in a fight. Yeah. But Dean, what can be done about groin strikes in MMA?
I mean, that's a gray area and a tough problem to solve, because if you make the punishment too harsh, then you're probably going to start seeing guys faking groin strikes more often than not and pretending to be hurt more in order to get their opponent punished more. So it's kind of a gray area. I don't actually kind of like the idea of maybe allowing the person to start from the position that they want to start in order to give them kind of somewhat of an advantage. But it's just such a gray area, because I know how detrimental groin strikes can be, but at the same time, if you make the punishment too harsh, then you're going to start seeing guys faking getting groin striked in order to allow their opponent to get punished.
Okay, so what do you think? How many points?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you guys agree, but like the problem with groin strikes is like they're not created equal. I mean, there's deliberate, like, reckless kicks that are just right at the crotch, or reckless, you know, teeps that are, you know, right there. But a lot of times, you know, you guys throw leg kicks and both opponents are moving. So it's just one of those things that happen, and it's kind of like there's true accidental ones and there's reckless groin kicks, you know. And it's I would say groin kicks of all the fouls are probably one of the hardest ones to really figure out, because it's just a bad one. But I don't have an answer for how to deal with groin kicks.
What I recommend is everyone get a metal cup. Get a steel cup. It will protect you a lot better.
Yeah, that might be the answer. Maybe to make that mandatory to use a specific cup to help with this, you know, so that it's not as impactful.
So let me ask you real quick. What's the worst type of groin shot? Because from what I see on TV, it's the grazing ones that go on the side. The ones where the cup kind of cuts into you a little bit. It's not like the full-on blunt force. What's the worst type?
Dean has a lot of experience on this. What is the worst type of groin strike you've hit someone with, Dean? Please, tell us.
No, man. No, I'll tell you one thing, though. For lack of better terms, I got kicked in the noodle once, and that was the worst pain I ever felt. I felt like my noodle was being severed.
It felt
like you know how when you put salt on a slug?
Sure.
you were the slug down there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Jesus. Shrivel.
Hey, that's not pee coming out of that blood. What
yeah.
the hell? So I would say the under, you know, if you get like straight under and it lifts, I think that's the worst one, because then everything goes to your stomach. Oh, it's. But I mean, for me, I've had a metal cup since I think 2016. And honestly, I've been hitting the groin a bunch of times during fights, and I feel perfectly fine because it's a metal cup. Like, you end up actually hurting your foot kicking me. You know, actually, I wear a bigger cup on purpose, one, to make me look cool. But then, two, if I take someone's back, dude, that cup is straight at the lower spine. Oh, I'm such a jerk.
Shorty wears his in a club in case girls want to kick him in the ding-ding.
Yeah. God. I wear it in practice just in case Dean is aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you wearing one right now, Shorty?
I'm wearing one right now. Like, you don't even know. You never know what's under, like, this area. You know? So I could be wearing a crop top. You don't even know.
I just assumed you were wearing a crop top.
I always wear a crop top, honestly.
Lipstick and crop top and steel cups. Yeah. That's Shorty's right there.
I got work right after this, so you know, the UFC game and MMA game in general, we don't get paid a lot, so I got work after this. Quarantine is tough, man.
Oh, wait, since we have two pros right here, I want one more groin question I have. when you do get hit hard, from when I talk to other fighters, basically after about 30 seconds, you either are done or you have to fight. Because what I've been told, like, if you get hit hard, the only way to really get rid of that pain is to have another man try to kill you, so you have to concentrate on that. I don't know. What do you think? Oh, I lose everyone? Oh, no. Oh, no, I lost everyone.
Oh, well.
Okay, there we got
I'm
Shorty now.
What? Oh,
there
you go. Gotta click the video icon.
To me?
Yeah, you. Old man technology, you know. Sorry, guys. gotta walk across the street sometimes.
He's clicked.
Don't worry. We'll get you home, Pops.
Are you stealing Wi-Fi from, like, Starbucks? What's going on?
That hotel Wi-Fi is giving out on him. They're like, man, he's past his subscription fee.
Oh, there I go.
There you go.
There he is.
Oh, man, that's never happened, actually. That was weird. Just everything just died. Yeah. All right, well, I guess the universe doesn't want to hear anything about groin shots anymore.
Well, we had a good conversation going right when you died, Casey.
Jeez. All right. Go on.
Are we live?
Yeah, we're live.
Okay, so everyone, that technical issues, you can all blame Casey. It's his fault. But, Casey, before you died, you said, because we have two professionals on the site right now, I have a question, and then you just crapped out. So what was your question?
Oh, I was like, guys, we let me change. Oh, hold on. Is everything
hold okay? On, he says. Yeah.
So guys, because you're professionals, when you get kicked in the dick really hard, you know, you get 5 minutes. But what I've been told, basically after about 30 seconds, you know if you can fight or not. And the only way to really get rid of that pain is to basically start fighting. You have the other guy. You need that guy to start attacking you, so you have to worry about that guy. Otherwise, you're just going to focus on the pain. Is that true?
I don't know if that's really true. I mean, the pain is like the thing about getting kicked in the balls is like sometimes it's a delayed pain, and then it just gets worse. And you try to get them out your stomach, you go up and down. But no, I don't know. I don't think that by him attacking you, you stop thinking about the pain. I think the pain's going to be there. Like, if it's going to be there, it's going to be there. I don't think that, you know. In fact, like I don't want nobody jumping on me while I'm trying to deal with my nuts and my guts.
Well, he said like after about a minute, you know, because you get 5 minutes. But so after about a minute, you know, I don't know. I was just.
No, it's one of those where like you ever been, I mean, hell, even like flicked. It's just one of those things where it's like, oh, that kind of hurt. And then out of nowhere, a minute later, you're just like, oh, man, it's OK. It's really starting to kick in. It's a super delayed reaction to certain people. Again, sometimes it might be an immediate reaction. Some people it might be a delayed reaction. Some people freaking throw up, you know. So and we've seen that in UFC fights where the guy just couldn't continue and just started throwing up. I think after like two or three. In a break, and they're like, yeah, we think this fight's gonna be over. It's like, no, he's after he throws up, he's gonna wipe his mouth, be like, all right, guys, let's go. You know, so it's one of those things that it's different for everybody. I broke my hand and tore my MCL in a fight before, and I remember breaking my hand, going, is it broken, feeling a little bit of pain? And then once the next round started, I started getting punched in the face, and I completely forgot about my hand and was just started throwing my hands again. So it's the fact of some people's bodies react different, adrenaline works in different ways, but a nut shot. Nah, man, those end you, especially if they go inside your guts. No, it ends you.
I think it was the Matt Mitrione fight. He threw one kick about 5 seconds in, low blowed the guy, and the fight was a wrap. The guy couldn't fight anymore. That was like February 2019, 2018. Can't remember his name, but
I do remember that fight.
It was Haritano, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
And I asked if, because that was one of those, they had the back-to-back fights. They had fights like Thursday, Friday, or Friday, Saturday. I was like, could they just rebook that fight for the next day? Because that fight.
Heavyweights.
What was that fight, Dean, that I talked about? Joe Sun getting, who was the guy that punched him 12 times?
Keith Hackney?
Yeah, Keith Hackney punched the guy named Joe Sun 12 times in the dick. Yeah. Before he let go. So again, everybody's reaction is different, you know? So. That guy, I need to take his martial arts. It's called Joe Sando. Well, look it up, Google it, so he might get famous. But it's one of those things that, hey, maybe I could take a nut shot and be better prepared in my fights. Dean, we got to start practicing. Let's go.
No problem.
Foot stomps and groin shots. There you go.
From Corey T. Bear on the site, top contender legend fights. I've always wanted to see Jose Aldo versus Dominic Cruz, like we just talked about. Ever since Aldo dropped down, they're both coming off a loss in a title fight. Both can stay in title contention with match up with title implication. Longtime listener, love the show. Shorty, what are some legend fights you want to see that we can now see in the year 2020 or 2021?
Oh, man. Now this makes me think. I mean, Jose Aldo has a lot of opportunities. You know, Jose Aldo versus Dominic Cruz. I think it'd be fun to see him fight Cub Swanson again, since that was only, what, like a 10-second fight. You never know if that would have gone different. Hell, even Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo, too, would be a phenomenal fight. What if that fight went past the first round? They both have a poor gas tank. You know, whose poor gas tank is better? You know, so I think, honestly, that would be a phenomenal fight. But, you know, Jose Aldo has a lot of opportunity for those fights. And, man, I'm trying to think. Maybe even Khabib, you know, bumping up a weight class, you know, and going to fight those guys at 170. You know, who's the 170-pound champ?
Kamaru.
Yeah, so... You know, maybe seeing him, you know, wrestler versus wrestler, but then you have a sambo style, you know, so that would be an extremely interesting match. Maybe it ends up being like Kobe Kamaru, where they end up saying, screw this, we're just going to box the entire fight. You know, who's boxing is better. So, you know, there's a lot of fantasy fights. I'm trying to think what's
Francis tell you one that I,
versus everybody.
Tell you one that I've been asking for forever is I've always wanted to see Cruz versus Frankie Edgar. Two of the people with some of the best footwork I've ever seen in MMA. And I want to see Aldo run it back against Uriah Faber at 135. That first fight was at 145. Dean, any other legend fights you want to see in the UFC or not? Well, not even just the UFC.
Well, I mean, legend fights is a tough thing to say, but in terms of like, because it's different from fantasy fights. So in terms, I don't know about legend fights, but fantasy fights, I would like to see Aldo run it back with Conor. And in terms of fantasy fights, I'd like to see John Jones and Francis. I just think that's the fight to make, because I think they both have present each other challenges that they've never faced before, and I'd like to see how they deal with them.
Casey, what about you?
Cyborg versus Nunes. I want to see that. I want to see that one run back.
Part two?
Yeah, part two.
I like it. I think you unfroze. There you go. Oh. Yeah, that 100% that fight has to happen eventually. Lightning round. So quick answer. What happens to the winner of tonight's main event? Maybe Max Shorty. Cater versus Danny Gay. Whoever wins fights Max.
Cater, I think, should fight Max. You know, it's a top contender fight. It's being headlined for a reason, and Max Holloway needs a couple wins to get back up to title contention. He technically lost twice to the champion. He needs definitely more than one to get back to it.
Dean, what do you say?
It seems like that's the fight that kind of makes sense. But, I would love to see Cater versus Max. I mean, that would be
an
amazing fight.
I think Calvin Cater's boxing is so underrated. I'll watch that cat hit pads for an hour, and I'll find enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, he can box.
Do you think Ori will fight again soon? Maybe it'll be against Colby or Edwards. Dean, what do you say?
I'm hoping he fights Colby. I think that makes sense. And if that's not the fight that happened, I think he should get a rematch with Usman.
Interesting. Just because it was on short notice?
No, just because I think he presents the biggest challenge to Usman right now.
Interesting. Shorty, your thoughts?
I think he should fight Colby. I think that fight makes sense when it comes to the rankings and just the feud. You know, George has, or Jorge has, pretty much all the hype behind them. I think this is just a fan entertaining fight. We saw Colby fight Kamaru Usman and how big Colby was able to bring the crowd about, you know, whether they liked him or hated him, wanted to win or lose. I think it'd be the same thing against George.
I like that fight. Jorge's very adamant he's not going to fight, quote unquote, the fragile guy with the MAGA hat. Colby's already said,
but if you pay him right, he'll do it in 6-day notice.
Colby says he's pretty interested in a Tyron Woodley fight, and Leon Edwards and Jorge Masvidal gotten a dust up backstage in London. So any of those four fights, I'm all about.
Colby versus Masvidal for the BMF championship. Sell it like that.
There you go. Who's next for Amanda Ribas? Hashtag the A-side from the C-side. Dean, who do you want to see Amanda Ribas fight next?
Wow, I mean, she's so talented. I used to love being around her in the gym, and she's such a pleasure to be around.
She called for the winner of Carla Esparza and Marina Rodriguez or Michelle Waterson, but Michelle Waterson has a fight with Angela Hill already lined up.
Well, I was going to say Angela Hill maybe would be an interesting matchup. But, yeah, I think any of those make sense for her.
Shorty?
Yeah, I'm going to say the same. You know, it's one of those things that division is pretty well-rounded. And for her, she's been doing her thing. What is she, 4-0 right now in the UFC?
Something like that.
You know, so she's been pushing the pace and beating some phenomenal fighters. Again, she bumped up this weight class to beat Paige VanZant. She's going to go back down and fight whoever's next. I think her against a skilled veteran, Angela Hill or Michelle Waterson, would be awesome. Maybe she gets the winner of that.
Casey?
Ribas versus Joanna.
Whew. I like that fight.
I love vets versus prospects, and I think you see where they're at. But I know it's supposed to be lightning round, but what is it like being in the gym with Amanda Ribas? She seems like just the most. I absolutely love her as a fighter. I just love her personality, and it's like is that her in the gym when you're grinding out rounds, everyone's exhausted, and she's still like hello, you know? What is she?
Pretty much. Well, she comes in that way. But, I mean, she trains really hard. She's really focused and dedicated on her craft. And she's I mean, whoever is working with her is lucky to have someone like that, because she's very positive all the time. She's just a sweet girl. I mean, obviously, when she's training, she's not all bubbly because she's so focused on what she's doing. But before and after, she's that girl.
That's great, man.
A lot of questions from Dan Shapiro on Twitter. If Burns fights Usman for the title, what are the chances the UFC uses the opportunity to tell and sell the story of a world-class athlete fighting and beating COVID en route to a title shot? Hashtag the A-side. P.S. Hope Dean and Gilbert are healthy and recovering well. Dean, is that a good storyline for the UFC to sell of a fighter overcoming COVID en route to a title shot?
Not really. I don't think so. I think that's kind of a cheesy way to sell that. I mean, because, you know, like if – if his conditions weren't that bad, unless he was in the hospital on a respirator, then I think that maybe that's a different story. But it's a cheesy way to sell a fight. And thank you very much, Dan Shapiro, for the wishes. I'm doing air push-ups right now.
Shorty, is that a weird narrative to sell?
It's a weird narrative to sell, but I believe they're going to do it. Yeah, probably. Well, it's, I mean, you look at I feel bad for not remember, but the guy who lost his daughter. You know, it's like they literally headlined that throughout the whole fight. You know how much stress that stuff is? Like that, dude. It's literally you're reminding this guy every single day while you're filming him, while you're fighting, and then that's headlines in the fight. So everyone obviously wants him to win. They're gonna root. They're gonna watch. Cool. That's great. But what's the stress taken out on this guy? Given I know COVID is not the same thing because Gilbert Burns is perfectly fine, but it's one of those things
He's not like hospital sick, but sorry, he's not hospital sick, but he definitely, we have an interview coming up tomorrow. He definitely said he felt it. It really affected him, but not hospital sick yet, but yeah, sorry.
You know, so that's the thing. Unless he was in the hospital and on a respirator and all these crazy things, I don't see it being, you know, sellable, but I can see the UFC doing it as like a big, leading up to the fight type of thing. And I believe they'll probably even make a documentary of, you know, the UFC being the first promotion in the world, you know, to come back after all this COVID.
I think that's 100% going to happen. When I was in Jacksonville for all the fights, the UFC PR was like, y'all are going to be in a documentary at some point, like 30 for 30, like the fighters, the media members, everyone that had to go through this ordeal.
Yeah, if you think you can sell it, they're going to make it. And that's, mm-hmm. You know, that's what I see. Whether it's good, bad, cheesy, or not. If they can sell, they got it.
All right, two more questions.
From Aaron_1988, what is Dana's problem with Aljamain Sterling? Will do anything to avoid naming him as the rightful next challenger. Possibly something to do with speaking out on fighter pay before? Hashtag the A-side. So, yeah, interesting. I know there's a rapid-fire one, but, yeah. I think it's pretty obvious Aljamain Sterling is the number one contender at 135 pounds in the UFC. And Dana keeps saying, we'll see. I haven't thought about it. He seems to be the only one saying that. So, Dean, what is Dana's problem with Aljamain Sterling to answer this question?
I don't think he has a problem with it. I think that, you know, Dana, every time Dana says something, he's scrutinized for what he says, and he has to always go back on what he says, because the reality is that, you know, if Henry Cejudo comes back, Henry Cejudo's getting that title shot. Mm-hmm. So he can't really just say, oh, Aljamain's getting it next, and then have to go back on that if Henry Cejudo wants to come back. So he's going to make sure that it's definite before he gives Aljamain that shot.
Well said. Shorty, anything you want to add to that?
I think it's based on the numbers. You know, everything lately has been on pretty much who's more popular. You know, who has this, who has more views, who's going to sell the tickets. And Aljamain Sterling might not be the most popular guy in the world, but he's definitely 100% the most deserving of the title shot. Do I believe he deserves it? Yes. Do I believe he can win? Yes. It is a tough fight, but I believe he has a really good chance. But right now, I don't see it happening anytime soon. If Henry Cejudo comes back, they're going to have that. Unless they have this, they'll probably make Aljamain Sterling fight another top five guy, or even top three guy for that matter, just to get the title shot. It doesn't matter how well he performed against Corey Sandhagen. They're probably going to give him another one just to build off more hype to make it possibly a more popular fight.
Case, anything you want to add?
I think, he should get the title shot. If he doesn't get the title shot, it should be – I think Marlon Moraes is the forgotten guy. He beat Aldo. He's on, you know, he gave Cejudo a whooping before he lost that belt, but before he lost the fight. I mean, I think Marlon Moraes is an amazing bantamweight, and
he was also already scheduled to fight Jan.
They have a written contract. Those guys are supposed to fight already, before all the pandemic. So it's weird. All right, and final question.
Better UFC debut, Jerry Prochazka or Michelle Pereira? What is Prochazka's ceiling in the light heavyweight division? Casey, better UFC debut, Prochazka or Pereira?
Oh, Prochazka, absolutely. Who was his debut against?
Danny Roberts, right?
Yeah, I mean, Danny Roberts wasn't a top 20 guy. I mean, Danny Roberts is obviously very talented, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't a former title contender. What Jiří did was amazing. So, yeah, Jiří. I don't think anyone's coming. No one's going to be Anderson Silva's MMA UFC debut. No one's ever going to be that.
Justin Gaethje.
No.
Best UFC debut I've ever seen. Fight of the year.
That was the most exciting UFC debut. But to come against Chris Lieben, and Anderson Silva got the title shot based on that performance. That's why.
Yeah.
But so, the answer is Brinch. Oh, how do you say his last name again?
Jerry Prochazka.
Prochazka, sorry.
Jordy, what do you think?
I go Prosca. You know, he fought a top 20 guy. He did his thing and performed really, really well. He has a resume behind him, and I think overall he's going to move much farther in his career, much faster. But I think when it comes to UFC debut, he put on a hell of a performance.
Dean?
Yeah, same thing. I got to go and just, you know, say the same thing, that Prohaska did his thing and against a very popular guy. So you got to give him the nod on that one.
Yeah, I think knocking out former title challenger is always going to put you a step above. But Casey, that's all the questions we got.
Yeah, I mean, we have lots of YouTube questions, but we've gone 10 minutes.
Who
over,
follows so. YouTube?
Yeah, right.
But they
try so hard. They ask so many questions. Let me get one person's question.
Here we go. We got time.
Please let it be about Dean. Let it be about Dean.
Oh no. You can talk amongst yourselves.
So, Dean, how many air push-ups have you been doing today?
I can only do 20.
It's tough, man. 50-50?
No, I don't. I do 20 at a time.
How do you do laundry stuck in a hotel,
Dean? I don't. I haven't. I ain't gonna front, man. I ain't showered for the first 4 days.
Amen.
The good news is I lost my smell, so it didn't matter.
So the crazy thing is, when Dean says this, nothing has changed. He's just now in a different place. That's it. He's just now in his hotel room. So, look at it. It's the same thing. You literally are in your room doing interviews all day, not showering, not changing, eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It's the same routine. The same amount of air push-ups, which is the craziest thing. So, nothing's changed. He's perfect with that.
From Joseph Boza on YouTube. LOL, on 9 days' notice, we found out that Bellator is back with Bellator 242, Ricky Bandejas versus Sergio Pettis. Your thoughts? So, guys, yes, we talk about UFC all the time.
Yeah.
Sure, you're not a UFC fighter. You're a Brave fighter, and now we're at a Bellator question. So what are your thoughts on Bellator coming back with Bandejas versus Sergio Pettis? Sergio Pettis is, of course, this is your weight class, Shorty. So what do you think?
I've actually trained with both of them, Ricky down at American Top Team and Sergio Pettis up at Rufus Sport. They're both phenomenal fighters. I'm going to give the slight edge to Sergio Pettis, but Ricky's been able to come back in almost every single fight. I believe in every fight that he's won in those crazy knockouts, he's literally been losing. And then out of nowhere, you know, spinning back to somebody or you know, randomly hooks him backwards. You know, he does crazy, unorthodox things, and I think that's what's going to be his advantage in the fight against Sergio, because he is so technical. But, you know, a lot of people make it underrated. Sergio Pettis' jiu-jitsu is actually really, really good. So he is a very well-rounded fighter. I don't know if Ricky Bandejas is going to be able to withstand that on the ground as well. I mean, my game plan against Sergio would be, I'm not going to brawl with this guy. I need to push him to the fence and take him down and then work off the top and push that gas tank. So hopefully he starts to die out in the second and third round. Maybe Ricky's going to do that. But again, I know Sergio, you know, from personal experience, he's prepared for that and he's ready to work off his back as well. So, and I think that's a very close fight. I think it's a much deserving fight, especially for Ricky, you know, being James Gallagher and all these guys coming up. I think it's awesome for him to finally have a headlining fight. So I think it's an amazing start for Bellator.
Dean, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I trained Chris Kaledes to fight Sergio Pettis, and the game plan was to get him down and wear him out. Turns out Sergio was better than him on the ground, so it was like, so, you know, Sergio's a really good fighter, but if anybody's good at spoiling the party, that's a guy like Ricky Bandejas. Mm-hmm. So he's good at spoiling the party, so it is an interesting matchup, and, you know, all I can say is it's going to be fun to watch.
This isn't a 5-round fight, right? Casey, Bellator
doesn't
do 5-round.
No, their main events were still 3 rounds for non-title fights. Oh, well,
I wish this was 5-round fight. But both of you guys agree that, so like, the way the Cejudo fought Pettis is the way to beat him? Just take him down and, like, wear him out?
Yeah, but here's the thing. When Cejudo took him down, he was pretty much forcing Sergio to wrestle. He was making Sergio stay in referee's position instead of working off his back and working the jiu-jitsu. He pretty much would take him down and let him kind of get a little bit of room to get back to referee's position to try to stand up. And that's all Henry Cejudo did, was just kind of lay on and put the pressure on his shoulders. And anytime he got up, he picked him up, brought him back down, and kept him in referee's position the entire time, or if not side mount. So there wasn't really much room for him to attack. But with Ricky, you never know what type of takedowns he has. He is a longer individual. Maybe he's able to get a body lock. Maybe he does trips and sweeps. But it just depends on what he's trying to do with Sergio. Sergio is very good both on the inside and outside. I think he's a little bit better when it comes to his overall stand-up skill, compared to his brother, because he is used to doing all the things with his brother and learning a little more and starting at a younger age. So I think it's a great fight for both. I'm going to give the slight edge to Sergio, but like Dean said, the spoiler party has been Ricky all day, every day.
I love this.
Is that the last one? Is that the last question, Casey?
Yeah, we can keep going. I mean, it's up to these gentlemen.
I mean, Dean don't got anything to do. He ain't going anywhere.
I'm not going nowhere.
All right, wait, hold on.
You're just going to see a peanut butter jelly sandwich just come out of the, just below the camera. And a glass of milk.
Yeah.
Okay, actually, cool. we've gotten a few variations of this question, but...
Volk Max 3 should happen. So I'll use this to ask both of you guys. How did you score Alexander Volkanovski versus Max Holloway?
Dean?
Well, so when I was watching it, I wasn't paying all that close attention to it to score round by round the way it should be done. So I can't really go back and say that I thought Max was robbed. But when I was watching, I was thinking that Max was in control. And I thought he won, not paying close attention. It just looked like he was winning. So I'm going to say that he won the fight, but should three happen? I think that's a bit disrespectful to Max right now and everybody else in the division, because now you are undermining Max as the champion, or not Max, but Volkan as the champion, and saying, you know what, we know that you lost that fight. In his mind, he won that fight. So, and in the judge's mind, he won that fight. And based on the rules of what we have, he won that fight. He's 2-0 against Max right now, so... You know, I think he should probably get another opponent first before he fights Max again.
Shorty?
Yeah, Dean was too busy. He was playing Words of Friends or Words of Scrabble. True. And then doing air push-ups. So he was working hard, working the brain and just physical. He's a champion. Anyways, so I actually watched the fight. I did pay attention. I don't have I like games where, anyways,
I was coloring.
Yeah, there he was coloring. So I gave it Max Holloway 3-2. I think Volkanovski was able to push it towards the end, but I thought it was a little too late. Was it a close fight? Yes, but I still gave it 3-2 to Max. I don't believe it was a split decision, but again, the judges look at it the way it did. I'm glad I'm not a judge and have to deal with all the backlash at a late bird. But, it's one of those things that technically, record-wise, he lost twice. I believe he should fight two more times to prove that he's still, one of the greatest featherweights of all time, and then just get back to it, to a title fight, whether it's Volkanovski still or someone new.
This kind of reminds me of the Frank Yeager Benson Henderson fights. Like, that first fight was so close, and then the rematch, a lot of people think Frankie won, and Frankie kind of threw his hat in the air and says, "What else? What do I have to do to get that second judge to give me this in the favor?" Anyway, Casey, what do you think?
I don't mind the trilogy, but I know it ain't going to happen. So I'm going to suggest another fight that's even more doubtful to happen. Conor McGregor versus Max Holloway 2 at 155.
I wish.
Yeah, I know. It ain't going to happen. But that's the fight. And I think Max Holloway is already a top five lightweight. I mean, he was so close. Him and that Poirier fight Poirier, put a beating on him, but they both took a beating. So I think Max is a top lightweight too. So Max versus Connor. Ain't gonna happen though. All right, when one last question.
Dean, you got pineapple jelly over there?
I don't, man. I got regular jelly. I had them bring the regular jelly this time. Ooh.
I've never had pineapple jelly.
I'm not the only one. All right, cool. Make it
sure. Shorty's like, this is the blackest thing I've ever seen.
Dude, I went to the fridge. I'm like, man, I'm having a craving. Because I always have peanut butter sandwiches. So I'm like, oh, I'm having a craving for something sweet. I'll find some jelly. I'm looking in the fridge. I'm like, what's this, yellow, jelly-looking thing? And I was like, pineapple jelly? This is the blackest thing I've ever seen. I'm Latino, so I've never heard of pineapple jelly, like you just said. Which, thank you for clarifying. Yeah. I appreciate that. But, yeah, no, it's – yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
I'm tropical. You know that.
Because you live in Florida, doesn't make you tropical. You're from PSL.
I'm tropical, he says. Casey, what was that question I saw?
Final question. The most important one. You know what's coming up, Jose.
Yep. Dean's ice cream choice. So I will preface this with this. We've had this question. Did we ask you this, Shorty? About the hand cannon?
No.
So
no.
I will ask you that. That amazed me because we've asked almost all of our guests since we got that. This is a very important question.
I'm not important.
It's usually the first question we get, but we'll close it with this. So I'll start with Dean. In this fictional world, I'm going to lay the scenario. In a world where you can solve world hunger with a Mega Man-style hand cannon on your arm that can shoot one flavor of ice cream, what flavor are you picking to solve world hunger? And keep in mind,
cookies and cream.
And keep in mind, this is not a continuous stream like soft serve. This is like one shot, like it's doom, 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 scoop flavored, not soft serve. You're going cookies and cream?
Cookies and cream.
That is the correct answer. Shorty, what is your answer?
I second cookies and cream. This is why Dean and I get along. That's all we do after practice is rehydrate with cookies and cream ice cream. So if anybody wants to sponsor us, that would be amazing. And pineapple jelly. If you guys both same company make pineapple jelly, you know, that'd be great. But Dean's getting all excited over there. But I cookies and cream all day, every day.
That is the correct. What was your answer, Casey? You were wrong, right?
I think I had pistachio or chocolate chip mint.
No, mint.
Dean is.
Those are two bad.
Man.
Those are two bad ice
cream. Cookies and cream. That's a great. That's a great choice.
Cookies and cream is the correct choice, followed by cookie dough or chocolate fudge brownie. Because my argument is, if you're solving world hunger, you need a ice cream flavor with like things in it, so you can fill up more. It's less ice cream. That's what I'm saying.
And cookies is the best thing you can have in it.
Dean was so disgusted by the chocolate mint. Casey, what jelly flavor do you put on your peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Let's see Dean's face. Ready?
Oh, but. I'm very interested in this pineapple jelly. I'm very interested in it. It sounds.
What jelly do you have in your fridge right now?
As long as you say orange marmalade, we good.
My God. Anyway, is that all the questions we got, Casey?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, as always, the guest of honors of the show gets a final say. Shorty, I'll start with you. Anything you want to say to our, you know the drill. Anything you want to say to our lovely listeners?
I don't have a crystal yet. I'm still waiting for that. What is this, like my sixth show? I'm surprised.
Yeah, we'll
I
get you. Like, we're on it.
I haven't been paid. I haven't received a crystal. I think I actually lost followers. No, it's,
damn.
No, man. Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to everyone surviving COVID. Great for you guys. Dean, love you. And I'll see you soon. You know, growing shots of foot stomps. Don't belittle those guys. Everybody gets one. But, no, man, I appreciate all the support. If everyone wants to follow me, Jose Shorty Torres on IG, Shorty Torres MMA on Twitter and Facebook, TeamShorty.com, where it helps my foundation and helps kids, teens, and young adults stay inside the gym and off the streets. I know right now not all the gyms are open, but I'm able to buy gear, whether it's a punching bag or actual physical gear of boxing gloves, shin guards, stuff like that, so guys can practice at home and stay off the streets and stay inside the gym. So it's Team Shorty Foundation, with 100% of my proceeds go to my foundation to help people. So I really appreciate all the support, TeamShorty.com. And Hans, I'm still waiting to get sponsored by Monster. I love you. That's like, I think it's 5 episodes ago I brought this up.
Yep.
I'm telling you, I'm doing all my shout-outs now. Dean, do you have anything, Dean?
Yeah, the first thing I'm going to do when I see you, Shorty, is I'm going to spit right in your mouth, all right?
Good Lord.
I hope you're prepared for this.
More?
Yeah, more. I'm going to spit right in your mouth. But please follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Dean Thomas. Dean is spelled D-I-N Thomas. And if you need some energy, get a quick strip, energy strip from EliteOpsEnergy.com. That's my people. The energy is perfect for you. So check them out, EliteOpsEnergy.com.
Well done. Using both of your platforms to push something you need. Anyway, Casey, anything you want to say before we sign off?
No, just wait. Thank you to Mr. Shorty Torres and thank you, Mr. Thomas, for joining us today. And thank you for everyone for taking time out of your day to listen to us talk about hitting people in the dick.
Dean, yeah. Stay safe out there. I hope you get home soon. No one wants to get stuck in that holiday. I've been in that holiday. No one wants to get stuck in there for longer than 2 weeks.
I just want to say, I want to see videos of people trying pineapple jelly and just like a yeah. I need to see this.
Tweet all of us your thoughts on pineapple jelly, because I'd never heard of it until about 5 minutes ago. I hate pineapple to begin with, so I probably won't try it. So someone tell me how it is. But for Jose, that's Jose. That's Dean. That's Casey. We'll be back next Wednesday. Fights today. Media day tomorrow. Weigh-ins Friday. More fights Saturday. It's Fight Island Fight Month. Fight Week, Fight Month.
Fight, 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 fight.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.